When a film is called Detective D and the Mystery of Phantom Flame, it's hard to know what to expect. But if its director is Troy Hark, you can be assured that you're in for some lively filmmaking. As one of the most significant figures in Hong Kong cinema, Troy Hark has been dazzling audiences with movies like Peking Opera Blues, Green Snake, The Swordsman, and Once Upon a Time in China for over 30 years now. Detective D was a hit at this year's Venice Film Festival, and it will be opening in theaters here in early September, but you can see it tonight at a special screening that Troy Hark will introduce at 9 o'clock as part of the New York Asian Film Festival. And that's right after he will be receiving a 2011 Star Asia Lifetime Achievement Award, and I'm honored that it has given me the chance to speak with him today. Le Ho Ma.
Hello.
some would call Detective D a kind of Chinese Sherlock Holmes. Here he's asked to solve a mysterious case where people inexplicably explode and burn up. Is he based on a real-life person?
The character actually based on a historical figure in real life, yes.
From this time period?
In the 7th century. Mm-hmm. And basically, he is a very famous prime minister with the also very legendary figure, Empress Wu, in the 7th century in the Chinese history.
Empress Wu is the first woman to ever become an emperor in any country?
It's not the first, but it's the first in China. Uh-huh. It's the first and the last. She was the only one woman who became the king.
And part of the plot here involves the fact that there's resistance to having a woman ruling the country, even though she's been the regent for quite a few years.
Yeah, because you see the thing, because it's always a taboo, or maybe it's like people really afraid that, you know, the weaker sex, which actually I shouldn't call it, actually is a very sensitive term, a woman in the palace who became very important political figures after a period of time. And Empress Wu was in the palace when she was 14 years old and became the empress when she was 64. So that was the time that, you know, the people during that time, all the political figures were against this situation, because she was the concubine for the older king and became the queen for a younger king.
Because in many other similar situations, that somebody like her would have been the power behind the throne. She would have gotten a son coronated or somebody, and she would have really controlled things. But in this case, she actually became the empress. There are novels by the Dutch diplomat Robert van Fulik that also deal with Detective D.
Right.
Are you basing your film on his novels or on your own research?
Van Kulik's novel was one of the reference material for our, you know, script writing process. But, you know, it's quite different style in his novel, because the thing about detective is you have to have a logical, system that you can lay down as a groundwork for all the mysterious happening of any strange kind of case, murder or, you know, thing, burn up, explosion in the middle of mid-air, something like this. But then Van Gulik's detective system is pretty much, you know, sometimes not very consistent. That's why after we refer to his novel, then we turn back and say we have to invent our own system, so that, you know, it can easily establish in a movie.
And you also have to create a visual world.
Yes.
I don't know how much that's based on what it really looked like in China from AD 618 or so during.
What we see now in the movie, the big Buddha, did exist in history. And it was within the vicinity, in the close distance to the palace, as what we depicted in the movie. It was exactly happening in the past, in history. Only it was not as big as now we have in the movie, but it was big. It was really tall, Buddha.
You've called the Tang Dynasty, which was from, at least in our calendar, 618 to 907, a rather futuristic place.
Well, it actually was very modern period in the history of China, because you can see the women were dressed in a more exposed, you know, style. Most of them you can see, can compare to what's going on nowadays, that they are pretty liberal, open-minded. And it was like a very mixed culture between the West and the East. You have Italian, you have Indian, you have Turkish, you have the other world, other part of the Asia. And then it was very, very, like 10% of the population was foreign.
Mm. Really, that many? Well, you have foreign visitors coming throughout the film. But and they probably all were in awe of the achievements in China, which is the most advanced country at that time.
That was very, very prosperous, metropolitan culture during that period.
You have two of Hong Kong's biggest stars in principal roles, Andy Lau and Karina Lau. What was it like working with them? Is it a problem when you're working with superstars in Chinese cinema?
Well, not so difficult for me. Actually, we were friends for years. Like Karina and Andy Lau were very close friends. We always...
They're not related, are they? Just the LAU is the same.
No,
it's a very common name.
It's a common name. It's like, you know, we have a lot of Laos and a lot of Chans around. But then, you see, we have been friends for years, and we see each other's movie, and we sometimes, you know, we would meet and talk about, you know, comments about, you know, the people's work and, you know, our work. But then we all look for a project to work together. And for Andy, he's been around for so long, and even sometime I was involved in some very indirect way to the project, but we never really collaborate together, like Karina Lau too. So, you know, sometime during dinner, you know, party, we always rap about, you know, the possibility. So when I have this project, Detective D, I thought of Landy and Karina right away. And because Karina, the choice of the cast for Empress Wu, you need somebody with, you know, to kind of mature enough to play that role. And also you have enough charisma, and that would sometimes, you know, is a result of accumulation experience in life for so many years. And like Karina Lau, is very appropriate, you know, talent to play that character.
Well, what attracted you to this whole idea of Detective D and the Empress Wu? Is this something that is really an important period in Chinese history, in most Chinese people's minds?
You see, Tang, 7th century in China, was supposed to be very romantic. You have the highest number of poets that came around in that period of time. And then even nowadays, you know, we're still reading the Tang poetry, significantly representing the culture of China at that period of time. And so many years along, we still appreciate, it never fade away, this kind of culture. And so, in that period of time, a legendary figure called Empress Wu, the woman as a king, you know, comparatively to the West, you have Cleopatra, you have Elizabeth, the queen, but the king in the 7th century in China was very legendary and romantic in a way. So I was very interested in doing a movie about her. And then she is coupled with Detective D, which also a very famous prime minister during his time with the Empress Wu.
And was he a detective as well?
No, he never played detective. People romanticize him as a detective because he worked in the judiciary office during that period of time. He was so efficient that it got famous because of that. And then so people imagine he's a detective, very good in investigating on cases.
Well, your plot here is interesting on a number of levels. On top of trying to figure out what makes people suddenly burst into flames, it's puzzling why the main characters act as they do. For instance, Detective D has been imprisoned for 8 years for opposing the Empress-to-be, and yet she has him released from prison to solve the crimes. And what's even more surprising is that he agrees to work for her. Is he compromising his ideals? Is he a flawed hero? We wonder about that. And then we think about all of the other people who seem to have their own agendas in this plot. Is this something that that developed along the way, or was that the idea from the start?
That's been around all the time. I mean, in the basic structure of a story, the idea always was there in the beginning. Only we are creating like a very iconic images from the world that we try to create uniquely for the story.
Well, and Detective D can't trust any of the people he's working with, including the Empress Wu's special servant, Jing Er, the romantic figure in this. You discovered her, didn't you? The actress there, Li Bingbing?
She has been around for a while, and I think she's good. She got a war, acting award as the award was given by the Chinese Mainland Festival, but then she never worked with me. We knew each other again for a long time, and we're always looking for a project to work together. So Bingbing was quite ready when I cast her as one of the talent who played for the movie.
Well, did you tell her she could throw a pot at Andy Lau?
Yes, that's a major thing. I think it's a challenge that I want to put her into a scene she seduces Andy Lau with taking off Andy Lau's clothes.
Troy Hark is the director of Detective D and the Mystery of the Phantom Flame, which he will be introducing tonight as part of the Asian Film Festival at Lincoln Center's Walter Reed Theater on West 65th Street. If you want ticket information, you can go to our show page at WNYC.org. So you didn't discover her, but you played a role in making some people's careers or helping them in their careers. John Yoo, the very famous director, whose film A Better Tomorrow you produced, the actor Jet Li, who's become a superstar. Is there something that you saw in them that encouraged you to help them out?
Well, I always tend to like somebody very easily. So if I really like somebody, I always think that's a good thing about this person. Like for Jack, he played in a movie called Shaolin Temple once in the 80s, early 80s. And then since then, I really like him a lot. I was a very good fan of his, and then we met quite a lot of times. And I want to make movie to put him on the movie so that he became different than before. So this sort of thing, I think we always kept in contact and we talk about project. And that's how we came about some film that would make them more outstanding than the one that he involved before. Like John Woo, we are friends all together for so many years before we collaborate.
And then all of you have worked in Hollywood as well. How different is it than working in Hong Kong? You seem to have access to all the special effects in Hong Kong that any director might wish for.
Well, I think working in Hollywood is one good experience is you get to work with a lot of people from different parts of the world. Like in Hong Kong, then you probably end up working with the local people. But then Hollywood, that you get to know a lot of people, good professional from different part of the world that, you meet a French person, you meet a Italian person, but then they're all here.
But haven't things changed a bit since Hong Kong has been reunited with China? Because now there's been fusion, or there's people been moving back and forth into China and into Hong Kong. And you were born in Saigon, weren't you?
I was born in China, but I migrated with my parents to Saigon.
So you grew up in Vietnam?
Yes.
How did you wind up in Hong Kong?
During the 60s, that, because of the war, I think everybody was moving out of Saigon because of, it was difficult to survive, the wartime. And so my parents went to Hong Kong and brought me over to Hong Kong. And that's how, I ended up in Hong Kong for several years, and I got to study in Texas in the state.
You also lived in New York for a while, didn't you?
I lived after my college, and then I moved to New York and did something in the documentary production house. And at the same time, I was a reporter here for the Daily News in Chinatown.
Did you always want to be a director?
Yes. It's my dream about being a filmmaker is first, of course, director is my, you know, like my goal. But actually, I was ready to do anything. I was ready to even, you know, do anything, even a janitor for a production, you know, like a crew.
Well, you must be very good at languages because you probably grew up speaking Vietnamese. Then you had to learn Cantonese in Hong Kong. You probably had to learn Mandarin as well. You speak English fluently.
Well, in this case, probably I will end up like average in all languages. Sometime, you know, I may be caught in some situation like suddenly I may not recognize some language in the first hand. Like one time I was in Beijing, I rushed up to a meeting, then somebody suddenly spoke to me in Cantonese. I stood there for a while. I couldn't understand what she talked about because I used to speak Mandarin in Beijing, but suddenly somebody spoke Cantonese to me. I was, you know, like...
It's out of context.
I was suddenly, you know, out of lines.
Hong Kong has gone through a number of cycles. People said it was dead for a while. Is it making a comeback?
I think the situation could be interpreted in this way because I think the filmmakers were all over in different markets, in different industry. Like you in the 21st century, in the late 90s, a lot of director, a lot of actor, a lot of choreographer, action people who were involved in production elsewhere, outside of Hong Kong. And at the same time, the market in mainland China opened up. That was a big attraction for investors. That's why a lot of people moved in to China to establish their career, and they did production over there.
Well, you can make a lot more money if you release a film and it becomes a hit in China than if you're stuck with Hong Kong and a few other countries. But so you studied film in Texas?
Yes.
Do you think of yourself as coming out of the American film tradition?
Well, actually, I have a very vague idea where I came from. I'm coming from everywhere. But you see, going to Texas is something like it's like a opening chapter for my decision of my future. The reason why I went to Texas because they accept me as the film student. Mm. And I was pretty lost during my teenager years. I couldn't decide what to do. And anybody accept me as doing anything, I would go.
Well, this film was a hit at the Venice Film Festival. In the old days, the only kinds of movies that would have been hits would have been very serious European dramas. This is a film with a lot of fantastical features, a lot of special effects. Do you think that the taste of moviegoers is changing around the world, that they're recognizing that this kind of movie can also be art?
That's a very difficult question to answer. You know, I always very curious about the truth behind everything. Because I always want to know what make people from different cultures share something together. And I really want to work on that area a lot because I think it's very important that we can share something together from different cultures.
You also have an asteroid named after you.
Yes. It was early, like 2000 sometimes. I was informed that there's a starlet in the sky named after me. I always took this as something like funny and not very serious.
Oh,
and
I would think that would make you into the superstar of all directors.
And I want to see where it was located, you know, that sort of things.
I hope you don't crash and burn. Choi Hark will introduce and do a Q&A tonight at 6 o'clock for the screening of his 1995 film, The Blade. And then he'll introduce Detective D at 9 o'clock at the Walter Reed Theater on West 65th Street as part of the New York Asian Film Festival. For ticket information, go to our show page at WNYC.org. Thank you so much for being with us.
Thank you very much.